listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Got a microphone.
Timmery here with my co-host Don Johnson today. Chris is out. For those on the Relevant Network who are hearing us now, you've not had the pleasure of being with Don the last couple of weeks as he's been filling in here and there on our other network with Trending. So be sure to go back and catch the podcast because Don is up to so much. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Timmery. Good to be here.
So this weekend is a big weekend for you.
Very big.
What's going on?
At long last, we have the premiere of my new movie, Unprotected.
Mm-hmm.
We're premiering it at the Humani Vitae 50, Celebration 50 conference in Ontario, California, this Friday night as we record the show. So you may hear it after. But yeah, it's been a long process, and it's nice that it's here.
This movie, I've had the opportunity to see multiple cuts of it, and it is incredible to see the impact it will have in waking people up in an educational setting to what contraception has done to how we relate to one another and to our happiness.
You know, it's interesting, Timmery. I think the first time you saw it, you had mentioned that you were like pausing and taking some notes. You know, it's not usually the way we watch a movie. And I get that, you know, as a filmmaker, you kind of like, I want you to really feel it and watch it all at the same time. But here's the thing. With this one, it is a little bit different. I hope you can watch it all and get sort of the regular emotions of a, it's made like a regular movie with the ups and downs and the emotions. But I heard the same comment from other people, Timmery, that they're like, you know what? I went back, I watched it again. So people that have previewed it, I didn't realize that was going to happen. They're like, I went back, I've watched it several times, and I did it with my taking notes.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stuff in there. And I mean, I can't take credit for that. I interviewed some amazing people. But there's a lot of information and stories that just hasn't been told. I mean, one of the subheadings we're using for the movie is the untold story of the sexual revolution. And I just think people don't know.
You know, I watched it about a month or two ago now, and looking back, you know, I was sitting here taking notes, but here's why. We just did a whole show on Humani Vitae. I have been blessed. For me, I read it for the first time when I was 12. I was sharing this. I found it on my mom's bookshelf and I picked it up. I picked it up again when I was about 15. It was something that has been transformational for my own formation. But here's the deal. You watch this documentary, and just a caveat, I'm not a documentary person, just so you know, and I loved it.
Oh,
so
good.
A huge compliment to you and your abilities to bring story to a difficult conversation and to a lot of information. But the information is so profound, the stories, the mindset, I mean, where you talk about Freud and how Freud ended up rejecting contraception. You go through all of this. You guys, this is a goldmine of information to equip you to speak out against hormonal contraception. And all you have to do is recognize there's going to be fear in those conversations, but you can say something still.
Yeah, we do hope that it will be a tool that people, not only will it encourage you, if you're on, you know, the pro-Humani Vitae side, it should be a great encouragement to you knowing that there's a lot of support, that this has been detrimental to society and to stand firm in that belief, but also to help others who maybe are pro-contraception, right? Like, well, this is craziness, who would ever be? That it's a tool that you can use either by having them watch it, or that you can be a little bit more equipped to know what questions to ask, what stories to point towards. So, yeah, hopefully it will have an impact.
Well, and a couple ideas. You can coordinate your own screenings of Unprotected because it's not available to the public yet unless you coordinate a screening at your parish, local movie theater.
Yeah, that's our first step is to do the local screenings. And actually, it's a great opportunity because even though the DVD, the digital download, is not available, won't be for a few months, what we want to do is have those screenings and then as a special gift to you, you actually get DVDs available at those screenings, sort of a preview copy. So it's sort of a 2-for-1. So yeah, you can schedule a screening for your local community, your local parish at unprotectedmovie.com.
Excellent. So we'll be looking forward to that. You know, this week, I really wanted to get your thoughts on this. So I read a quote that came out from a priest having to do with Snapchat. And for those who don't know, I know people are like, what's that? Snap face, snap something for any of you adults. And all the young people are rolling their eyes right now. So Snapchat is a form of social media. It is the most commonly used social media for young people today, especially in high school. They don't text message. They Snapchat.
Right. They message using the app, right?
Yes. So they're using pictures, and then you can add text to the pictures. Now, each picture you send has a certain period of time, say between 1 and 10 seconds, where you can view it, but then it goes away. It's gone. You can take a screenshot of it. So how Snapchat originally got started was more so to be a little more risque, sending pictures that would expire. But it turned into the primary form of communication for teenagers today. And there is a little bit of concern here.
Yeah, the priest, and I don't see it on my screen here, Timmy, so you're going to have to give me the exact quote, but he just said, basically, get Snapchat off your kids' phones. It doesn't matter if they hate you. Don't worry about that. It'll be okay later. Just do it. He says, as a priest who hears confessions, I want to assure you, you need to get it off your phone.
We need to take these words seriously. We're going to dive into this a little bit more so, because you may be one who has their hands up and they're saying, gosh, I don't know, this is difficult. Well, let's just piece through this together. So Father Dan Beeman says this, dear parents, get Snapchat off of your kids' phones now. Don't ask, just do it. Let them hate you. That will pass. Love a priest who hears their sins.
Yeah. So as a parent of teenage kids, I'm I totally get where the priest is coming from. I also understand that there's the perfect world, and then there's the world that you have to deal with as a parent. And so I totally understand, and I'm frankly one who, as much as I is dislike too strong, the phone is a problem, okay? The phone is an issue. Ideally, let me just throw this out there. Ideally, Timmery, I would not have any phones, you know? Ideally, I'd eat all organic food. I'd live on a farm somewhere. Off the grid, except for to be on it. That's what I would do. Now, is that possible for me? No. You know, I'm not going to live off the grid. I try to eat organic food. Doesn't happen all the time. And my oldest, has a phone with Snapchat. Now, here's what I really like about what the priest said. You have to be willing as a parent to have your kid hate you.
Mm.
That's absolutely correct. I've had this conversation with my wife, with our kids. Like, I'll explicitly tell them, and they're screaming at you, saying, I do not like the decision. You know, they're saying it in a different way. But really, Father, I do not appreciate the decision you have made.
Leave it to be the days.
And I'll just say, you know what? Yeah, I get that. I get that you don't like it. I get that you're not liking me right now. However, my role as a father and our role as parents is not primarily to have you like us, not primarily for you to be our friends. Would it be nice? Yep, I get that. But first and foremost, we need to raise you to be holy people. Like, when I stand before God, I'm not going to be judged on how good of friends I was with my kids or even my wife, frankly. It will be you as a father, as a parent, as a husband, what did you do to, you know, help the sanctification of your kids along or your wife along, right? Like, that's primarily our role. Does that involve protecting them? Yes. Does that involve putting them in situations where, you know, they have a chance to grow? Yes. Bound, all that stuff, right? Like, but the notion that we need to be friends first, and if I'm not friends with my kids, I got a problem, and that's why I have to let them have the phone. Absolutely false. So that, on that part of what the father is saying there, I completely agree.
That's Don Johnson. I'm Timmery Millington. You are listening to Trending. If you want to hear more, you can find us at radiotrending.com, and we're on the various podcasting apps as well. Don, you know, this quote, for those just joining us, a priest spoke out and said, you need to get Snapchat off of your kids' phones. Hear it from someone who is a regular man priest who is hearing your children's confessions. And, you know, I love that you always emphasize that you're not to be your kids' friends. And I think this is important because a lot of parents have this desire so deeply today to be friends, to be the cool parent. But that goes against what our culture says. And so I want to come back to this idea of, how do you have that balance? You know, at what point do you open the floodgates for your kids to use different social media apps? perhaps, because there should be a point where they have that freedom and they should have that self-control, and then they work with you on it.
Yeah, I mean, you're hoping for the best, right? As a parent, your goal is to grow them up so that they have wisdom, and wisdom means the ability to make wise choices given the situation, right? And so when they go out into the world, I mean, my kids hopefully are not going to be living with me forever. They're going to go out into the world. They're going to have the opportunity basically to have complete freedom, right? And so as a parent, not really much I can do about that. Hopefully I have prepared them by the time they are at whatever stage they are, that they can handle whatever freedom they have. And so I mentioned my high school senior does have Snapchat. I'm hopeful that she can make wise decisions with it. Now, my younger daughters, not only do they not have Snapchat, they don't have a phone. Mm-hmm. Am I going to give them one? Not anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Well, I don't think they're ready to handle that kind of freedom at this stage in their lives.
Well, and that might have to do with maturity. It might have to do with age. I think you kind of have to treat this somewhat case by case, because you may say, hey, you can't have a phone until, let's say, you're 16 and you're driving. But then they hit 16 and maybe you have one that's not the best at understanding how much risk you should or shouldn't take, right?
Right.
Well, and here's the deal, because I can tell you guys firsthand, I personally have chosen not to be on Snapchat. I know it's a great resource for evangelization. I hear you guys. But here's the deal. I know a lot of people, a lot of close friends and individuals, and some at a very young age, let's say 11, 12, and maybe a little older or younger, who are being sent the lower nethers of a male's body parts to get attention, and multiple times over and over again. And you click that and it's there.
Yeah. I mean, this is obviously one of the reasons my younger ones don't have phones, right? It's not just that they're making wise decisions, but you're putting them in a situation where they are under attack, essentially. You know, you don't throw kids out into a situation, if you can avoid it, where they are unsafe, right? And so, yeah, absolutely. There is so much that goes into, I mean, I think every generation probably thinks they have the hardest time, but man, I can't imagine that previous generations have had to deal with the air that our kids breathe is so filled with nasty, nasty stuff. It's difficult. Difficult as a parent.
You got to be careful with who knows your Snapchat name, who is able to contact you, who you end up having to block. There are so many elements to it, because your kid might have a good moral guard, but they're still being exposed. And it was put this way to me not too long ago. It was put, who would offer someone a magazine where on the first page are your close friends? On the second page, your family members. On your third page, people you kind of know. And on the fourth page, access to sexual images of other people you don't even know. Who would give that magazine to their child? Well, that's exactly what Snapchat is. You're communicating with friends, family, people you barely know, people you're just meeting, and you're getting sexually risque content being exposed to you. And you can't reject it. You tap the image and it is there in your face.
Let me offer just a few. Listen, I feel like I'm underwater on this stuff all the time, so yeah. I don't mean to come across as, you know, this is how you do it. No.
No, but we need these practical elements.
Yeah, practically. So a couple of things I think you can do. What you don't want to do is keep your kid in a complete bubble until they're 18 or whatever.
Right.
And then send them out. I mean, I grew up with some kids like that, right? And then they go out and it's just like, oh, there's the world. They go crazy. They go wild. No, I mean, that's not going to work. That's not how you build up wisdom. And I think one way to do it, at least try to, is offer incremental freedoms and then see how the kid does, right? So you offer them the freedom to, you know, do whatever, go out on a date with other people or whatever, right? Whatever it might be. See how they handle that. If they fail at that, then you have the perfect right to say, listen, we gave you some opportunities. You didn't do well at that. We're going to curtail some of your freedom now. I've taken that phone away from my oldest more times than I can remember, right? Over the years. She knows that, listen, if my dad's going to keep tabs on this thing, he's going to know where I am at all times. if I mess up, the phone will go away. And she knows this because I've done it several times in the past, right? And so, you know what? That's all right. You got to keep tabs, offer incremental freedoms. If they pass those, then you can offer more freedoms. And if they fail, you take away those freedoms. I think this is what God does with us in many ways. Is like, here you go. You know, push you out there a little bit, see how you do. And then you fail completely. And he's like, yeah, exactly. You know, you can't, now you're more open, hopefully, to learning. And so, one, give incremental freedoms and then take them away. But here, this is what that requires, though, is the monitoring. Like, you got to know what's going on with the kid, even when you offer those freedoms. Does that make sense? Like, you got to know what they're doing on their phone. Now, do I know everything that my senior in high school is doing? Not anymore, but for a long time, I did, and I still, you know, you still got to keep track. So it's that incremental thing, but also the ability to be, as a parent, I'm going to know what you do. And where you go and what you look at online. Mm-hmm. And if you pass and you show yourself that you can handle it, we'll give you a little bit more freedom.
And there's a difference between regulating and allowing for growth and then stepping further back, right? And allowing more freedom to take place to the point where they take ownership, right? There's a difference between that and totally suppressing them. And I'm thinking of this too, because we've been talking a lot about Humana Vitae. It's a 50th anniversary on the 25th of July, St. James Feast Day. And, you know, one of the things that it talks about in modern technologies is, you know, we shouldn't necessarily adopt every technology that becomes available. Just because it's available doesn't mean it's necessarily good for us. But one of the next pieces it talks about is how there's a difference between suppressing, say, the sexual urges or any urges, right? Even a young child who's rambunctious and wants to play. There's a difference between suppressing it, which we see with the zero tolerance policy, right? And regulating it. There's a big difference. And we have to remember that the regulation of our interaction on a human level is a very Catholic idea. This idea of aestheticism that in some ways we've lost in the church today. But if you read the Catechism of the Catholic Church, if you look at all the different documents, even Humanae Vitae, it talks about this rigorous self-discipline of especially the young, because the entire Christian life is a self-discipline, self-mastery.
Yeah, and I think what you're looking at there is a building of virtues, which we have lost in the culture, right? Like, the culture doesn't talk about building virtue the way the Catholic Church does, and therefore they can't really look beyond simple behavior modification. Right? Like, they're looking at human beings completely differently than the church does. And so if a kid is doing something that I don't like, I'm going to put a rule in place or a barrier in place to keep him from doing that. And as they get older, we'll just keep doing different things to modify their behavior. Whereas the church looks at that and says, ultimately, we're all made for certain things, but what I want to do is increase your virtue. And so I'm going to look at your whole person. So you've got a little rambunctious kid. Well, ultimately, I want him to grow up to be a courageous man of God, filled with all of the godly virtues. What can I do to help him build that up? Might it involve a few rules? Perhaps at a certain time, there might be a few rules in place to provide for safety or whatever. But the rules are not an end in and of themselves. And it's not just about the behavior modification, right? Mm-hmm. So if I get the kid to stop throwing stones, that's good. But that's not the end all and be all. Ultimately, I want him to respect and love that other person that he was throwing the rock at.
No stoning people.
No stoning people, right? But I want him to be a certain kind of person, not just a thing who doesn't throw stones. I think that's a big difference between how we generally view the raising of children today. I want them to behave in a particular way, rather than I want them to become particular kinds of people.
You know, anyone listening, this reminds me of a show we did just last week. Father Tim Grumbach was in for Chris. And by the way, that's Don Johnson joining me in studio. Chris is out. This is Tim Ray Millington. But with Father Tim Grumbach last week, we covered a piece that I saw that really stood out to me. It was President George Washington's 110 rules that he learned as a child for civility and discourse. And basically, there was something that he had to write down over and over again. But I learned in doing some research that this is much, much older, over 500 years old about. And it was given to us for young men, young boys, by the Jesuits, hoping that in their public discourse and their basic manners, that these out exterior interactions would influence the interior man and help them to develop. And I think we could say in the case of George Washington, it worked out pretty well.
That's interesting. Who's the Canadian psychologist who has become so popular?
Jordan Peterson.
Yeah, Jordan Peterson. So he does things like this. I'm not an expert on him, but I know that, like, one of the first things he has in his rules for life is, like, make your bed.
Yes.
You know, this sort of thing. And it seems like that's very similar. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he gets into the virtues or anything like that, but I think he's recognizing that if you're going to the type of men we're producing right now, it would help you if you made your bed in the morning.
Well, men are so task oriented too, that making your bed, keeping your room clean, it kind of gets to point to the interior of your life, not just the exterior. So true. You know, I want to get your thoughts here. Don, James Gunn, who is the director of the Guardians of the Galaxy and has been projected to be the one that was going to take over the Avengers franchise after this last Avengers movie. He was recently fired, having to do with some online, I think it was tweets about 10, 12 years ago. And I read this interesting piece on the Daily Wire talking about how, man, like, we change and we grow. We've made mistakes. We get to a different point. I personally don't really know anything about James Gunn, but what the conversation, as it goes is, should we be automatically fired for some really inappropriate, and let me just say that what he said having to do with rape and children and ejaculation are just filthy and unacceptable, but is that the man he is today? And that's where I think the question lies.
Yeah, there's a lot of different layers to these kinds of stories. We're seeing this more and more, people who are losing their jobs, losing their livelihoods over something they're put online. By the way, just, don't put stuff online if you don't want it to be there forever. Right. If you don't want people reading what you just wrote 70 years from now, digging it up, or if you don't want your future employer to know about it, because that's how it works. OK, if you don't, in the future at some time, you might make somebody upset and they're going to comb through every social media post you ever made. And if that can come back to bite you, don't put it out right now, just as a site. However, this one, I'm of two minds about this, because on one hand, I think that we should look at the type of person you are when we consider hiring you for a job, or if we consider promoting you, or whatever it is, right? The type of person you are has to play into that. Are you virtuous? Now, do people change? Yes. I mean, of course, that's the whole point of the Christian message, is we are sinners who are redeemed, right? Like, yeah, if people don't change, we're all in a lot of trouble, right? Like, that's the whole project, is redemption. So in assessing this case, and if I was going to hire James Gunn, I would look at those tweets, and they're disgusting back in the day, and I'd say, is this the kind of guy you are right now? Because if it is, yeah, I'm not interested in you being over my movie franchise. Absolutely. On the other hand, should we be the kind of society who does comb through all of these other things and just automatically, because we've seen this go both ways, right? Through legitimately people getting fired for being disgusting people. Recently, Roseanne, I think, legitimately got tossed from ABC for saying some racist stuff. I get it. I don't think you should be able, if I'm going to hire somebody and they say something online that I think is reflecting badly on me as an organization, yep, you should be able to fire them. But we've also seen it where people who supported Prop 8 in California are losing jobs and years later.
Right. Proposition 8 was where the Californians across the board voted just in 2008 to uphold marriage between one man and one woman. That passed, but then there was a legal challenge to it because people in favor of same-sex marriage said no. So people who are in favor of marriage between one man and one woman today, you're saying, are being fired?
Yeah, and we saw this from the head of Mozilla was booted from his job for, yes, had a tweet or whatever back in the day supporting, right? So it goes both ways. My main concern is, as a society, what do we consider things that are beyond the pale when it comes to the type of people that we want to elevate to high positions in society, right? Like, what kind of people do we want to esteem? Do we want to have the big jobs? Do we want to be our leaders? And that, to me, supporting Prop 8, I'm okay with that kind of person. Are you a misogynist, obviously sexually perverted person? So I think that's sort of a deeper issue that we sort of, because I think a lot of times, especially in Hollywood, I know that years ago, he would have been fine tweeting that stuff out. The Hollywood culture is disgusting in many ways. And so that's, that to me, sort of a deeper issue.
Well, prior to September, Harvey Weinstein and everything, I don't think he would have been fired before that. Today, not even a year later, he was absolutely fired. And again, is he that man today? Catholicism, the Christian lifestyle, the sense of conversion is our whole story. Look at St. Paul. Look at St. Augustine. Coming up on the show, we're going to be talking about how a TED Talk came out recently, basically claiming that you're born a pedophile and you can't really change it. You're born that way. We'll also be talking about the importance of masculine examples for children as they're growing up and how vital this is in our society. So we'll be coming up with much more on Trending. Don Johnson is here for Chris Mueller.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Timmery here. Don Johnson is in for Chris Mueller. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, of course.
So if you did not catch the other episodes, he's been on a couple times over the last few weeks. So be sure, especially, to go and catch the episode having to do with Humani Vitae and his documentary, Unprotected. So, Don, oh my gosh, I wanted to vomit. This piece came out just sickening from TEDx. It is a German medical student from her name's Miriam Hein, and she is basically making the argument that pedophilia is unchangeable and kind of claiming that you're just born that way.
Yeah, and I'm not a prophet nor a son of a prophet or anything like that, but I know that I personally, and I'm not the only one, have predicted this for a long time. And here's why. Because logic is a hard taskmaster. There are certain assumptions that we have made for a long time in this culture that if they are true and you follow them to their logical conclusions, lead you to the belief that pedophilia and, frankly, everything else is something that you cannot change, that you're born with. And so, I mean, of course it's disgusting, but it's not the least bit surprising to me.
I want you to just stick with me here and hear this out, because I know this is tough to hear, and it is, especially for visual people. They are sickened. Anyone who has been sexually harassed, sexually abused, this can be hard to hear. But you guys, this is where we've gotten to. When we degrade the human person in its most innocent form, we're at the point where we are euthanizing and in favor of physician-assisted suicide now. I just saw a piece come out in another country. I can't remember which one. Two young children were euthanized recently. And it is just, we're at the point where we have such a disrespect for our bodies and who we are. We're in an existential crisis. We have no creative meaning to our lives. We've lost sight of the creator. And so, yeah, this is where we've gotten to. And, you know, when you look at pornography, the fastest growing online industry right now is child pornography. Why?
I do not like talking about the stuff or even thinking about it, right? Like, it's one of those things where you don't want to even consider it. And so I tend to get a little more philosophical. Like, I don't want to think, you know, about kids. But actually, I think the philosophical stuff helps here, because you actually nailed it. You talked about we've abandoned the creator, and after that happens, certain things happen, especially in Western society, where we have had a few philosophers. And ladies and gentlemen, if you don't think that ideas matter and the things that we are taught matter, almost everything you believe day to day was thought up by some person, some man or woman, at a particular point in time, and is likely not true, right? Like my movies, for example, Protestantism, where these are all ideas made up by a particular person at a particular time. This was a revelation to me, and when I realized it, I'm like, I'm not sure I want to believe that. The sexual revolution was based on a bunch of ideas that were made up by particular people at a particular time, most of them lies. This particular notion that we bring, a TED Talk, you know, this is pretty legit, right? If you get a TED Talk, you're like pretty mainstream, saying that pedophilia is something you can't change. Well, just follow me here. With post-Reformation and the Enlightenment, we had a bunch of philosophers trying to figure out, if there is no God, or if God has not revealed himself in a particular way, what are we and what's our basis for life, right? Mm-hmm. And we resurrected some ancient Greek ideas about matter being all that there is, that there is no spiritual dimension to life, and that basically everything is matter, a bunch of whatever the smallest particle
particles.
Is, you know, atom. Like, I'm just like, they think atoms, but it could get smaller, right, obviously. It's just a bunch of atoms bouncing around. It's a closed system of cause and effect. And that has particular consequences.
We're just random. There's no purpose
there's
to
no
who
purpose.
We are. There's no creative meaning. There's no creator. There's no, which that means there's no dignity or value. Because if you weren't made by something, you have no value. Just like a chair, there's a deeper level of value if you make that chair. If you need to sit in that chair.
Yeah,
in the eyes of the creator, you have value.
This is what Nietzsche was talking about, actually, with the whole death of God movement. He was an atheist who didn't believe in God, but he's like, this is not actually good. When you kill God, you got a lot of other problems. You've lost, for example, meaning, like you talked about. So if we're now people without meaning, and we don't even know what people means, what distinguishes us from a chair or an animal or a computer or anything else? What distinguishes us from anything? Nothing, right? We're now, you're right. The existential crisis, that phrase you used is exactly right. What that means is a crisis of purpose, of meaning, that I don't have a reason to exist. And it turns out, if you continue to take this thought even more logically down the line, that I don't even have free will. Like, I don't actually have the ability to make decisions. I thought I woke up this morning and had a bagel or had some Wheaties or whatever. Actually, I didn't. There is no such thing as me. I did not make that choice. You want to know who talks about this? You know, TED Talks took this talk down, actually. They've deleted it, and they've tried to get all the pirated copies. Good luck with that.
What
but
talk?
Anyway, the talk, the pedophilia talk.
They took it down?
They took it down. Yes.
Good.
But here's what's interesting. One of their other more famous TED Talks is by a guy named Sam Harris, who wrote The End of Faith, very famous atheist. Mm-hmm. One of his other books is called Free Will. Sam Harris is an atheist who's very logical in many ways, not in all, but in many ways. And he argues that if there is no God, and if matter is all there is, then assuredly we do not have free will. And therefore, Sam Harris, who's a very famous atheist who gives TED Talks all the time, argues in this little book that we should be more... I don't know if he uses the word compassionate, but for criminals, he says very explicitly that criminals, I mean, they didn't decide to be a criminal. They're just criminals. They're born that way. So we need to have a more open mind when it comes to dealing with criminals because they're born that way. That's just, and they grew up in a particular way that led them in that direction. Homosexuality, we're born that way. Pedophilia. Of course we're born that way. It all fits together. It's all very logical.
That's Don Johnson. This is Timmy Millington. You're listening to Trending. So what Don is getting at is when there's no purpose, when you're just a bunch of random particles put together to be what you are, and you get to the point where you don't have this understanding of free will, right? The ability to reason to something. Well, naturally, people would begin to think that you are born with tendencies toward pedophilia, toward same-sex attraction, because
with anything.
And I mean, we've got to be very clear what Don is pointing to when he's saying this is going to get further. And we're not the only ones saying this. I'm very careful to say it. But the next logical step in their thinking is bestiality.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. There's a reason that child pornography is the fastest growing industry, because we're creating chemical cocktails in our brain to desire and thrive off of more intense and shocking sexual intimacy in pornography. And so what we're getting at here is that there's no meaning to life. There's no ability to control yourself, to choose something as a good, because good isn't even such a thing.
There is no such thing.
Everything is relative to what I experience, what I believe, what I see. And at the end of the day, there's not much meaning. So you can live the way you want to live, and I can live the way I want to live, and good on you.
The whole idea that I would not judge is completely based on this worldview, right? Like, on what basis would I judge? I mean, you're just doing what you are essentially determined to do from the time you were born. I'm doing the same thing. You do you,
exactly.
I do me.
Exactly. I mean, this is the point where we've gotten to. And so when people say this, you need to say, oh, hold on a second. And I just did a show a couple weeks ago, What is Sex For? We talked about whether someone's born gay just a few months ago. Go back and listen to these episodes. I was just hearing from a listener, a young man, and a couple others were saying, I feel equipped to talk about this because it's not just my faith saying this, but faith is consistent with natural law, philosophy, psychology, and all the stuff studies that are coming out.
Well, and this is, again, touchy subject, maybe turn it down if you've got kids. But a lot of the sexual revolution was based on the, quote, studies of people like Kelford Kinsey, right? A very perverted individual who did a lot of pedophilia in his experiments. Ugh. I mean, just disgusting, disgusting stuff. But today, you can go to the Kinsey Institute. I mean, it just... disgusting stuff. But the worldview of this, and you'll actually hear people say, they're like, well, but it's natural. I have these desires. I should be able to act on them. This was Kinsey's argument. He said he actually took a bunch of people out of prison to do experiments on it. It's hard just to get into what he did. Anyway, but the argument is, you know, here today is that, well, people have these desires. If we have it, we should act on it. Again, going back to the notion that we exist here within a closed system of cause and effect where we just do what we do. And if I feel like doing something, I do it. Not because there is no morality out there. There is no even such thing as free will, so there can't be morality. And that's the whole, I mean, the whole basis of this idea that if we have a desire, we should act on it, is this notion that there is no God, there is no purpose to life. You are a closed system of matter. You're just a meat machine. And if we almost have to start there. In fact, my first book was kind of essentially about this. Like, if you don't start at that worldview level and start talking about some of these things, you're going to have a hard time discussing, because you're at different levels when you're talking with people.
Name of that book.
It's called How to Talk to a Skeptic. And it's about worldviews and how you interact with unbelievers and sometimes Christians. Sometimes Christians have a very atheistic worldview too. But how you interact with unbelievers on this worldview level so that you can sort of uncover some of the underlying presuppositions that people maybe don't even know that they have.
So here's a challenge. What is your worldview? What code do you live by? What matters? What does it mean? You know, I just gave this talk last week at a conference, and the topic was, does God make someone gay? Well, it starts with this question, who are you? Because if you can't answer this question, you're going to lack the ability to come to understand that there is such a thing as good and evil, truth and untruth, and that there is such a thing as God. You know, these are the questions we start to reason to, that there's an order to the universe. These questions really matter. And I mean, this is why people come into the church, because they start asking these questions and they see suddenly that there's actually an order to everything around us. I was looking at a painting. I was just at a museum, and it was about, you know, sexual perversion and sin that this one saint really struggled with. And on the right, it was the representation of hell and chaos and manipulated animals. And on the left was perfect order and nature and mountains. And you saw that a truly fruitful human life is directed toward order.
Yeah, and if there's no distinction between those, that's the atheistic worldview. So if there's truth, if there's beauty, if there's goodness, then there is a God, and you should become Catholic.
That's Don Johnson. You're listening to Trending.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Don Johnson is in for Chris Mueller this week, and we have been talking about TED Talks that claim that you're born that way with pedophilia, just like the common claim today that you're born that way if you're gay. This goes against the Catholic worldview, and we have to be willing to stand up and say something. One of the things that's been coming out lately, though, that is a theme that we need to really tease out a little bit more, is that this necessity for children to have a masculine example. Let me bounce this in your direction. So we were talking about Jordan Peterson earlier in the show. There was a piece that we talked about recently, Don, about how Jordan Peterson was looking at, from a psychological perspective, looking at the sciences, how young children need the father to give them the experience of rough and tumble play, and why, you know, families with just one male or female or two of the same, right, same-sex interaction, how the child is missing something that they need in that lack of father.
Yeah, and it goes back to, is there a nature of things? Like, are things a particular way? And can they be altered, right? Like this, again, not to get too deep in the woods, but we've been talking worldviews, right? And what is the meaning of life? And you're absolutely right, Timory, last segment. If you're just joining us, go back to the podcast, listen to the last segment. Timory talked about worldviews and the big questions you need to ask yourself. Everybody walks around with answers to these questions, right? Who am I? Why am I here? What happens when we die? Actually, if you can answer these three questions, where did I come from? What happens when we die? If you can answer those two, you probably have some sort of answer for the middle one, which is how then shall we live? Those are the three big ones. You get those two, those three down, you've kind of got a worldview. Well, the Catholic worldview is, of course, you're created by God. You have a particular nature. Like, you are a particular way. However, we also have free will, and we, alone among all of creation almost, can try to live contrary to our nature, right? Like, we can try to do stuff that's not the way we were meant to be. But this causes all sorts of pain and suffering. Of course, that's what happened at the fall. And then what happens when we die? Really, we just continue whatever we decided to do. If you wanted to try to live alienated from God and your true nature, I think that's a pretty good definition of hell, frankly. I mean, I think God just gives you, all right, if you're going to try to do that, you're not going to like it, but that's what hell is. Well, once you've got those down and you're starting to address some of these situations like, do babies need a male and a female? Well, yeah. Because if you go back to the how did we get here, God made male and female, and together they became the very image of God. It wasn't just Adam as the image of God, although kind of, right? It wasn't just Eve as the image of God, although kind of. They both have, but together it says, and they became the image of God. And I just think kids, ultimately, if you want to get philosophical and theological, they don't have a full image of God. And I know that sounds harsh, but just stick with me. Am I denigrating anybody there? No. I mean, I know so many, you know, single moms who are just doing an amazing job, right? Through no fault of their own. Listen, you're doing fine. But the way things are created, the way things are, is that children, to thrive and be at their best, need a mother and a father mm-hmm. for the full image of God.
It's how they're created. It's what they're meant to be born into. And a deprivation of that, we recognize that there's a deprivation, that something's deprived, right? They're missing something. Hence, in adoption, the goal is to get that child the best possible experience of both a mother and a father. And you look at studies across the board, families who stick together where there's a mother and father present, the children have better grades, a better emotional maturity, do better in the long run in careers, or have a stronger tendency toward a sense of religion. And not only that, but it impacts the society and the economic makeup and other families in a better way as well.
Yeah, and I think the way we talk about this, you mentioned the word deprive. I think that's really good. You know, since moving to Oregon, I've gotten a little bit back to my farming roots. You know, I grew up on a farm in Canada, but have been, you know, urban settings for decades now. But we've been doing a little bit of gardening and farming up in Oregon. And you know what? It's kind of tough to make plants thrive. Like, I don't know. I don't have a green thumb, even though I grew up on a farm. And it takes quite a bit, but mostly what you're trying to do is provide the plant the best natural fit, right? Like the best environment. What kind of soil is best for this particular plant? What kind of nutrients? How much water? How much sun? What's going to be best for this particular plant in order for it to be the best plant it can possibly be? That's not arbitrary. I don't get to decide that, right? Like, I can't just say, all right, I want a rhododendron, but I'm going to keep it in the dark and, you know, live in Arizona. It's not going to happen, as far as I know. I don't think that's correct. I think rhodies just live, you know, a different place in the south and in Oregon.
My succulents, if I overwater it and then don't give it any sun, I've gone through many succulents, and they're supposed to be pretty easy to keep
exactly.
alive. You mean sun and little water.
We try the succulents for that very reason. But you just think kids are like that. People are like that, right? Like, there's a way for them to thrive.
Yes.
And the best way to do it is to get them as close as possible to the things that are adept, that match their nature.
Right.
Right. Like, what were you made for? What's best for you? And in the same way, I mean, I love the organics movement, you know, and all the stuff that we do with food and health. I mean, I just think that's a really positive cultural move away from the unnatural. Yeah.
You can
exactly.
say that a little bit more often. Chris isn't in favor of the organic world.
Come on. This is so Catholic. I just feel like it's so Catholic because we're Thomists, right? Like, the natural, we want to live according to the way things are. Mm. It's not good to fill our bodies with chemicals that were not made to be ingested by the human body.
We've had health consequences. It drives me crazy. We didn't even mention this, but people care so much about what they eat today, if they don't care that some of those same chemicals and concerns they have are in the contraception
they're
using.
Yeah, exactly. This is a great argument, and some non-religious, like non-Christian, non-Catholic believers are coming around on this.
Yes, sweetening the pill.
Yeah, there's
an
anti-pill movement for this very reason, and as Catholics, we just need to be like, yep, that's exactly right. Guess what? It applies not only to the pill, but to every part of life, right? Like, divorce is not natural. That's not good for kids, right? All of these things, we wonder why our kids are struggling so much. A lot of it is simply feeding them stuff that's not natural, mm-hmm. from the porn to the hormones to whatever. To the culture that they're growing up in. It's not natural.
So let's take it a little deeper. We already recognize that psychology, scientists are really making it clear, not just on the human level, but even animals little baby animals need a male version. Studies of mice have been done. Jordan Peterson points to the importance of male and female animals. We're rational animals all the more so, right? But let's take it deeper. This impact of the father not only being present, but being the spiritual leader, giving that spiritual example. And I love reading these different stories about men who saw their father in the morning kneeling for a few minutes to pray or in mass praying and the impact that had on them.
Yeah, I think was it maybe our last show where I talked about the responsibility I feel as a father towards not only my kids, my wife. I know some people would look at that, would hear that, and say that it's sexist, that it's misogynist, mm-hmm. that your wife doesn't need you, you know, to take care of your kids. But actually, if the Catholic worldview is correct, there is something about the masculine nature that is different from the feminine nature. There's human nature, and then there's masculine nature, feminine nature, and they're all distinct a little bit. Mm-hmm. That is called to protect and to build up and to provide those roles, be the spiritual leader. I know there's a lot of, frankly, it's a problem in the church, that there's too many situations where, and again, here it's not meant to be sexist, but if the mother is the total spiritual leader in the household, it's not as good. Your kids are much more likely to leave the church if the mother is the spiritual leader and not the father. They're much more likely to stay if the father is the spiritual leader overall. I'm just saying, that's just sociology right there. Why? Because of the whole nature thing, though.
You know, nature and the differences between feminine and masculine. You guys, you know, we're not crazy here. Neuroscientists, non-religious people are being called neurosexists today because they point to the differences between men and women, not just on the bodily level, but on the level of the brain and how the brain responds even to basic medications like sleeping medication, not on the level of, you know, how high of a dose you have based on your weight or height, but on the level of how the female brain responds in a different way from the male brain and vice versa. You know, these things are fascinating. The Catholic worldview is the worldview. Our faith is so scientific, and we have this on our side. Faith and reason go together. And we've been talking a lot about philosophy today. I think that would be the message, that you guys are equipped to live and also project and promote this.
Yeah, you have the truth on your side, whether it's psychology, whether it's philosophy, whether it's biology, they all go together. I mean, it's amazing, isn't it, Timory? It's amazing that the supposedly scientific worldviews of the skeptics look at the female body and the male body and say there's no difference. What? I mean, who's putting their head in the sand here, right? Like, who's being blind to the evidence and who's willing to follow it where the evidence suggests? The Catholic worldview is so much more scientific and so much more evidence-based than really the Gnostic sort of believe based on nothing, you know, the just-so stories that we used to, the Rudyard Kipling things. That's the skeptic worldview that says, oh, yeah, male and female, no difference. Oh, yeah, it doesn't matter what kids, they can be in any situation, all that stuff. Really? No, let's look at the evidence. Let's look at the hard facts. We're not asking you to just accept mythology. We're not asking you even to accept ancient texts, although they're perfectly, you know, solid. We're just asking you to look at the available science, the available sociology, the available psychology. It's all pointing in the same direction.
a really neat video, actually, that is reminding me of this conversation. The Knights of Columbus put out an amazing video. I'll post a link to it. Everyday Heroes, a Royal Knight, and it's Mike Sweeney, the baseball player, talking about his father, who's also in the Hall of Fame for baseball as well, and the example of prayer, the example of masculinity that he set for him, and how Mike is modeling that to his son. Gosh, Don, it was so good having you in studio with us.
Yeah, awesome to be back, Timory.
How can people schedule a screening of your movie?
Yeah, unprotectedmovie.com is the place to go. You'll find info, links. It's a very easy submit form. You can get in contact directly with me, and we will set one up for you.
That's Don Johnson. We hope to have you on really soon to join
us again.
God bless.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timory. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timory.com.